From the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. Around the world, rates of teen pregnancy have been dropping for decades. In 1990, about 6.5% of all births globally were by adolescent mothers. By 2015, that figure had dropped to 4.7%, according to the WHO. But in Latin America, rates of teenage motherhood remain stubbornly high. Today, they're about 36% higher than the global average. There are a lot of different explanations for this phenomenon. Some experts blame poor sex education. Others talk about a culture of machismo that scorns contraceptives or the influence of the Roman Catholic Church. No matter the causes, the phenomenon has big consequences both for teenage mothers and their children. Death in childbirth is one of the leading causes of mortality for Latin American teenage girls, and teen motherhood has a big effect on both economic and educational prospects for mothers and their babies. Now, in a few minutes, we'll hear from three guests who have been tracking this issue closely in Venezuela, a country in the middle of an economic collapse that also has one of the highest rates of teen pregnancy in all of Latin America. But first, we're going to bring in Lina Roa. She's a Colombian-born research fellow at Harvard Medical School who's been doing research on this issue in Peru and Brazil. She joins us now from Dubai in the United Arab Emirates. Lina, welcome.
Thank you.
Well, after Sub-Saharan Africa, Latin America has the highest rate of teen pregnancy of any region in the world. And this isn't just something that's linked to income level or poverty, because rates there are much higher than, say, Southeast Asia or Eastern Europe, places with similar incomes to Latin America. So in a nutshell, what's going on?
So as you're saying, adolescent pregnancy is closely linked to poverty, social exclusion, as well as social and sexual gender-based violence. All of those are very prevalent in Latin America. Then when you look at why poverty is related to it, the most common reason is contraceptive methods are not affordable for a lot of women, and especially adolescents, since they usually have less access to income for contraceptive use. So that's one of the first causes. However, even adolescents that have the means for that, they also need to have the education, and that's an important issue in Latin America. Education often happens in schools. Most schools have some sort of program on sexual education. However, it's important to remember that this education has to be evidence-based. It's very difficult to know what actually gets taught at schools. Some schools are religious-based, and different religious groups have different beliefs on what methods to recommend for contraception. So education mixed with economic means has a lot to do with access to contraception. And if there's no access to contraception, then what results is adolescent pregnancy.
Well, talk to us about social stigma in the U.S. and many countries. There's many parts of the U.S., there's significant stigma around teenagers becoming pregnant. Is it the same in places like Colombia or Brazil or Peru?
So, fortunately, well, social stigma, it could be for both things. One, for getting pregnant. I agree that's common in both North America and South America. However, in North America, a lot of women have access to abortion. So a lot of unwanted pregnancies result in abortion. And that means that society doesn't find out about them. So then maybe that stigma is reduced because it's not there because the pregnancies are terminated early on. So because abortion, safe abortion specifically, it's not widely available in Latin America, there is a bit more of stigma, I would say. However, because then adolescent pregnancy is much more common, you could also argue that there's less stigma just because it's more common. So I think stigma is a complex issue, and it's hard to say it's more here or less there. But as I mentioned, there's several factors that contribute to it.
Well, you mentioned that abortion is illegal in a number of countries in Latin America. I think it's banned across the board in 7 countries. It's allowed only with substantial restrictions, like to save the life of the mother in 8 or so. Correct me if I'm wrong on this. How does that play into this issue? What are teenagers' options if they get pregnant and don't want to have a baby at 15, 16, 17?
So I think the numbers you mentioned are correct. Different countries have different restrictions. The main one is some countries accept pregnancy pretty much, accept abortion is legal under any circumstances. So that would be the United States, for example. In other ones, there's restrictions such as only when the mother's life is at stake. Other countries will allow it in the case of rape or incest. Some other countries will allow it in the case of congenital anomalies, so when there's any malformation in the baby. So different countries in Latin America have different restrictions, but in general, as a region, Latin America has some of the most restrictive abortion laws. So if abortion is not widely available, a woman, an adolescent, has two choices. She can either seek an illegal abortion. An illegal abortion is usually equivalent to an unsafe abortion. And what an unsafe abortion is it's done by somebody who's not trained to do them, so usually not a physician, usually not a doctor, or they're done under substandard conditions, so not in a clean environment, not with sterile instruments. So then if there's any complications, then there's delayed in accessing care. And so obviously that often results in death or in a lot of complications with a lot of bleeding and organ damage and things like that.
And you've done, as I understand it, Dr. Rowe, you've done clinical work in Latin America where you witnessed the outcomes of some of these illegal abortions. Can you tell us about just one or two cases that you witnessed?
Sure. Yes. Unfortunately, one of the first cases I saw of a complication of illegal abortion was actually in Colombia. And because these procedures are usually done in illegal clinics, both the patient, as well as the practitioner, are often afraid of the legal consequences. So they often delay seeking care when something goes wrong. So I do remember this young girl. We didn't know how old she was, but she was clearly an adolescent. She came pale as a ghost. Her dress was drenched in blood. She came alone. A taxi dropped her off. We took her to the operating room pretty soon. And then when we opened her belly, we saw that there was a hole through the uterus, so through the womb, and whatever sharp object had been inserted had pierced her bladder as well as her bowel. So there was a big infection because now there's pee and poop all over her abdominal cavity. We tried to do the best to fix her bowel and her bladder. And then after that, she went to intensive care unit, but unfortunately she didn't survive. She ended up passing away a few hours later.
Well, one of the things that has changed with respect to U.S. policy in this region, and our time does grow short, but there is this policy called the gag rule that withholds U.S. aid funding for any charity or aid group that basically has anything to do with abortion, including even discussing it with women or girls. What impact has that had, if any, in Latin America?
So you're correct. The global gag rule has been around in the U.S. since 1984, and it's a bit of a political football because each new president decides whether to rescind it or reestablish it. There was a big study. It was done in sub-Saharan Africa, not in Latin America, but once the global gag rule was reinstated by Bush, actually the rate of abortion went up. The likelihood is once, because the U.S. government doesn't provide funding for contraception if abortion is being offered, then these NGOs cannot offer contraception. So it is likely that more women end up pregnant and then more women end up seeking abortions. So clearly this law is not being effective at all in reducing unwanted pregnancies or in reducing abortions. Now, what Trump has done is he has gone farther, and now he said, not only are we going to cut funding for contraception, but we're also going to cut funding for any essential health programs. So that means if any NGO offers or counsels or even mentions abortion, they restrict funding for other things such as children's health, HIV AIDS, malaria, or any other programs. So I don't think there's any recent studies that have measured the impact of Trump's extended rule, but it cannot be any good.
Well, Lena Roa, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
A reminder that this is Global Journalist. On today's program, we're talking about the stubbornly high rates of teen pregnancy in Latin America. One country where the problem is particularly acute is Venezuela, where teenagers account for nearly 1 in 4 births. Now, Venezuela is in the midst of a 4-year-old economic crisis caused by mismanagement of the economy and of the country's oil wealth that's had a big effect on its public health system, including efforts to curtail teen pregnancy. For more on this issue, we're joined by 3 people who have been following the issue there. Joining us from Caracas, Venezuela, is Luisa Kisslinger. She's a journalist and the director of the Asociación Civil Mujeres en Línea, or Civil Association of Women Online. Also with us in Caracas, we're pleased to welcome back to the program Alexandra Ulmer, a Venezuela correspondent for Thomson Reuters. And joining us from Gainesville, Florida, is Rebecca Hansen. She's a professor in the Department of Sociology, as well as a researcher at the Center for Latin American Studies at the University of Florida. Let me start with you, Luisa Kisslinger, in Caracas. Health data, it does seem to vary on teen pregnancy in Venezuela. What are some of the best statistics that we have on this problem now? Do you have a sense as to whether or not it's getting better or getting worse?
Oh, it's definitely not getting better. The situation has, we have no official statistics to speak about the issue and how, whether it is improving or it's getting worse. The only statistics that we have are from UNFPA's State of the World Population. In last year, it placed Venezuela as the country with the second highest rate of teenage pregnancy in the region. And we came from a third place the year before. So the situation is not improving. If anything, it's staying at the same level. And to this, you have to add the fact that the government is not putting in place policies and programs that would address directly this issue. And in fact, this is an issue that the government has recognized as a big challenge in international fora. Very recently, the government promised and in fact paid a bonus of 700,000 bolivares for each woman who is pregnant. And this is just goes to show that this is not really a sound policy that would address the core issue that is behind teenage pregnancy, which is lack of sexual education and lack of access to contraceptive and lack of differentiated services for teenage.
So the government is actually providing an economic incentive to encourage pregnancy. You said 700,000 bolivares. That's actually only a few dollars. That's a relatively small amount of money. Nonetheless, in the midst of an economic crisis, you can see how that might make an impact on people's decisions. But let me turn this to you, Alexandra Ulmer. If we can step back for a moment, give us just a snapshot of the healthcare system right now in Venezuela, where you've been working. You know, tell us just about what the outlook is for clinics that these young women might rely on.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. So the health situation here in Venezuela is very dramatic, and it's deteriorating incredibly quickly. Again, we don't have exact data, but the medical shortages hover around 85% or 90%. So we're talking about everything from chemotherapy drugs to antibiotics to basic painkillers. Hospitals are understaffed because doctors are emigrating. The infrastructure is crumbling because there are no resources or maintenance work being done. And of course, it's much worse if you don't have any money to pay for a fancier clinic that might, you know, be able to import a bit more medicine than the state-run hospitals. And that is where a lot of poor pregnant Venezuelan women are going. And the Venezuelan data we do have shows that poor Venezuelan women are much more likely to have teenage pregnancy. Therefore, they are even more at risk as the situation here worsens.
Well, you talked about shortages of many basic medical supplies. How does that apply to contraceptives?
Well, contraception is very hard to find here, or it is vastly unaffordable for people. So everything is essentially imported now because national production has ground to a halt. So something as basic as a pack of condoms could cost, I don't know, two or three times a monthly minimum wage. So it's vastly out of reach. It's gotten to a point where it's so dire that I actually did a story about a year ago on Venezuelan women voluntarily turning towards sterilization because they're terrified of getting pregnant in this situation and they can't find ways to adequately protect themselves. But it's also having the converse effect of, at least anecdotally, seems to be increasing unwanted pregnancies because women aren't able to properly protect themselves.
Well, Rebecca Hansen, let me move this to you. You've been researching Venezuela for some time. How apparent is this problem to you as an outsider? What's striking about it?
Just to respond really quickly to the issue of the incentives, I think that probably it's wanted to add that I think it's probably less an issue of the government providing incentives for women to get pregnant, because just gaining access to very basic foodstuffs and things like this that the government subsidizes is very, very difficult to do and takes a lot of time and a lot of work. So I think it's questionable as to how much of this money is actually even getting to women and whether or not could be justifiably called an incentive. In terms of what, so I was in Caracas 2 weeks ago doing some work, which my main focus is on violence and policing in the city. And I think that from my perspective, what is one of the most alarming things is why young women are raising children on their own. And a lot of that has to do with the increasing number of young men that are being killed in lower class areas by security forces. And this is a problem that has gone on for a very long period of time, but has really increased in the past few years, specifically since 2015. So that's not to take the discussion away from women, but I think one of the most alarming things for me from my perspective and in my area of work is asking where young men are in this picture, and to a large degree they're either being imprisoned or killed by security forces.
Well, Louisa,
in these poor areas.
Louisa Kisslinger, Rebecca Hansen raises a good point about some of the challenges that these young women face as a result of boys and men just not being around because of some of the violence that's happening in some Venezuelan cities. But talk to us, if you would, how does this issue look different than it did, say, 5 years ago in Venezuela? Is there really significant change?
The issue of teenage pregnancy, you mean?
Yes, correct.
No, it's not different. In fact, the official figures are more or less are showing that the issue have come to a point in which it has basically stayed the same. And I just want to talk about the issue of incentives. 700,000 bolivares is maybe $3 or $4. That's not enough money to really buy food, or it's not even enough to buy a package of disposable diapers if you find them. But it is a way of showing women that becoming a mother it's shown as if it's the only possibility, the only life plan that you might have, if you will, symbolically speaking. That's a message that you're getting across. I don't dismiss the fact that these women, most of them, as Alexandra was saying, come from poor backgrounds, and they sure can use the help. But it is a reality that instead of putting in place policies that would encourage them to get sexual education and to have access to contraceptives or to avoid the violence that is behind many of these pregnancies, this issue of incentives is what is being put into play. So no, the situation is not getting better. If anything, as Alexander was rightly pointing out, the economic situation is just making it worse.
A reminder that you're tuned into Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. On today's program, we're talking about high rates of teen pregnancy in Venezuela, where the country's economic crisis has led to skyrocketing costs for common contraceptives like the pill or condoms. We're joined by Louisa Kisslinger, a women's rights activist in Caracas, Alexandra Ulmer, the Venezuela correspondent for the Reuters Newswire, and Rebecca Hansen, a professor at the Center for Latin American Studies at the University of Florida. If you want more Global Journalists, check us out online at globaljournalist.org, where we have an interview and some great photos from the photojournalist Joey O'Loughlin about teen motherhood in South America. You can also like us on Facebook, where we live stream, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, or see our video cast on YouTube. Alexandra Ulmer, I want to move this to you. You've done a lot of reporting on this subject. You mentioned an article that you wrote several months ago about increasing numbers of women in Venezuela choosing to get sterilized because they didn't have any other options for birth control. Tell us, if you would, about some of the women and girls that you met while you've been reporting these types of stories there. What does the picture look like for a teenage girl that you've spoken to?
Sure. So when I first heard about this trend, it was completely by accident. I was interviewing a woman for something else, and she casually threw out that she and her sister were getting sterilized the next month. And I was very shocked when I first heard that, and I found it kind of appalling. And as I started reporting it, my I guess very Western point of view started to shift. Of course, these women are in often a very difficult situation where they can't even afford to properly feed their family amidst the crisis. And they can't risk getting pregnant again to have another mouth to feed. And they feel like they don't have enough any options other than go through a subsidized program that allows them to get sterilized. But at the same time, they were saying, I'm happy about this decision. It's my decision. Sometimes their partner supported them. Sometimes it didn't. Sometimes it had four kids already. Sometimes they only had one. But they felt like this was a way of taking a decision and having control over their lives despite these difficult circumstances. I remember being in the hospital with some of the women before they went in to get sterilized. And there was still this, you know, there was a lot of them were scared because it's a scary procedure. But there was this just raw sense of sadness. And one of the women said to me, in Venezuela, everyone used to get so happy when a woman was pregnant. And it is a very kid-loving, friendly, family-oriented culture. And she says, now when you get pregnant, people say, what are you going to do? How are you going to deal with this child? How are you going to afford it? So it's undoubtedly a very sad situation. And because a lot of women are unable to eat properly, and perhaps teenage mothers are especially exposed to undernutrition, there's so many more medical risks for pregnancies and for the baby. And then, of course, it's very hard to get diapers, vaccines, formula, anything, you name it. So this economic crisis is affecting everyone, but I think motherhood is especially difficult right now in Venezuela.
Well, Rebecca Hansen, you heard Alexandra talking about some of the challenges for pregnant women in Venezuela right now. How does having a child affect a girl's social status there, given all these challenges that come with having a baby in the midst of sort of an economic catastrophe?
I think that, like Alexandra was saying, that the culture is very pro-family, very family friendly. So a friend of mine, her daughter recently had a child. She was 15 when she had her, and there was largely still a lot of excitement around it. The family was very happy about the fact that she was going to be having a child. So there were concerns and worries about how to access basic things like diapers. So one of the last times that I went to Venezuela, I brought an entire suitcase full of diapers for people. So of course there's these daily challenges that are extremely difficult to deal with. But I think that overall there's still a very positive association. And this is, I think, one of the reasons why it's so challenging to deal with the issue of teen pregnancy, and particularly in urban areas, which is where I work, is that I'm not necessarily sure that there is a highly negative stigma around teen pregnancy. There is a lot of excitement and I think positive reinforcement of pregnancy, even now, given the challenges.
Well, if I may, please
jump in, Luisa.
Yeah, well, what Rebecca's saying is correct. The issue of stigma, it might vary depending on the social status of the girl. But in poorer socioeconomic groups, the issue of becoming a mother is highly valued. And it is seen as part of the realization of a woman, of a girl as a woman. Many girls sometimes get pregnant to sort of escape a situation of violence within the family. But in any case, we have to do a little bit more of research in terms of understanding why is it that these girls, particularly in this socioeconomic context where they come from poor families, they feel that the only way in which they are being taken seriously or they are being taken as a citizen, as a woman, is becoming a mother. And this connects to another issue, which is Caritas has been doing extensive work here.
That's the Catholic Aid charity.
Exactly. They are working with nutrition in boys and girls. And the data that we're receiving is that more boys are taken to these events that Caritas prepare for nutrition than girls. So this goes to speak about the position of women in Venezuela, particularly girls and teenage girls. What is happening with them? What is happening that socially we are not seeing them as citizens with entitled of rights? What is happening that they once they become pregnant is that when they are considered fully women. So we need to do a little bit of research in terms of what's going on there and trying to understand it better in order to address it in a proper manner, because this is leaving them behind public policies, and they're not taking advantage, for instance, now of these nutrition services that Caritas is providing, or to understand why is it that socially they are better considering, if you will, I don't know the word, they're better taken as full citizens once they become mothers.
Well, Alexandra Olma, talk to us about how the government is trying to address this issue to the extent that it is. How apparent are those efforts?
Other than the bonus that was mentioned by Luisa, I can't think of any real major policy decision. To the contrary, I think there's been essentially neglect. We don't have clear health data for the last two years. There was the health ministry. We leaked some data I hadn't been publishing 2 years ago. The health minister was promptly fired, and since then we haven't gotten any data. To fix the health situation here, you'd need a huge economic reform, which hasn't been happening, because we have currency controls that halt imports of medicine and medical equipment. You have salaries that literally amount to $3 or $4 a month, which mean that doctors are fleeing in droves. And there just isn't any resources to invest it in hospitals or in maternal health. So the government, if anything, has focused a bit on Barrio Adentro, which is the Cuban-staffed health modules, mostly in the slums, which had a track
record. These were built by the hundreds, even the thousands, under Maduro's predecessor, Hugo Chavez. Then there was this big expansion of healthcare access in the country.
Exactly. That was under Chavez. But these are small modules, mostly focused on preventive care. And when we're talking about complicated pregnancy and childbirth and pediatric care, especially in terms of complications, doctors here say they are vastly inefficient. But that the government now is bypassing hospitals in favor of pouring some limited resources into these health modules. But that's, again, vastly insufficient.
Well, Rebecca Hansen, our time does grow short. What can you tell us about the prospects for change? Where do you see this issue, which does seem to be symptomatic of some bigger challenges that Venezuela is facing? Where do you see this issue going in the next 3, 4, or 5 years?
I think that it kind of just it gets back to Luisa's point about needing more research on why the culture around and the cultural incentives, I think, for teenage pregnancy, because just talking about the Barrio Adentro initiative before the crisis really hit hard in 2014, I had multiple female friends who were able to access free contraceptives and things like that through Barrio Adentro, so they were relatively successful at providing affordable contraceptives through that program, but you still saw Venezuela gaining in terms of teen pregnancy. So I think that's to say that there's something else going on. That's not to say that the economic crisis doesn't matter, but it is to say that when this economic crisis is over, it's still going to be a problem that needs more historical, deeper research than just the focus on lack of contraceptives right now.
Well, we're out of time for. I'm sorry, Luisa. We're just out of time for this edition of Global Journalist, a production of the Reynolds Journalism Institute at the Missouri School of Journalism and KBIA Mid-Missouri Public Radio. Many thanks to Rebecca Hansen, Alexandra Ulmer, Luisa Kisslinger, and Dr. Lena Roa. Our assistant producers this week are Lily Cusack and Maggie Duncan. Raina Sims is our supervising producer, and Jiwon Choi is visual editor. Aaron Hay is audio engineer. Travis McMillan is director. For all of us at Global Journalist, I'm Jason McClure. Thanks for tuning in.